The Lifestyle Show, presented by Selena McKenzie.
We have managed to get hold of our first guest today, I'm delighted to say. So his book is called Entitled, which is the first joint biography of Prince Andrew and his ex-wife, Sarah Ferguson. It's packed full of extraordinary revelations, and it reveals the extent to which Andrew and Fergie's lives are still deeply intertwined. I am delighted to say he joins us now, renowned royal biographer and literary agent Andrew Lowney. Welcome back. You were last on the show in 2015 with me.
Gosh, 10 years ago. I've done a few books since then.
Yeah, so we were talking.
Lovely to chat.
We were talking about Stalin's Englishman then.
That's right. I was writing about intelligence world, and that was a lot easier than writing about the royals.
Well, I know you've got some great information that people don't know about. And in order to do this for your research, you had you did a lot of FOI requests. Is that Freedom of Information?
Yes. I mean, the Freedom of Information Act allows you to make requests to public authorities to open papers. Now, there are exemptions that are often deployed, things like personal data, national security, health and safety. And in fact, there's one for the royal family. But I tried to get all the papers connected with Andrew's time as a special trade envoy, 2001 to 2011. Papers which really, I think, are civil service papers, because he was a civil servant paid for by the taxpayer, and papers which should be in the National Archives after 20 years. And I'm afraid I've spent four fruitless years. In spite of hundreds of requests, I've not managed to get anything beyond one admission that they think maybe they won't release anything until 2065. So what are they covering up, you've got to ask? Mm. Who was he taking on these trips? Who was he seeing? And is there, as I suspect, a great deal of financial corruption at the heart of the royal family?
Well, sadly, it sounds like it. And I want to speak about Andrew first and then on to Sarah. But as a couple, they like to portray, and it does seem that they are the happiest divorced couple alive.
Well, that's their claim, and it's true. I mean, they still live in the same house, though it has 30 rooms, and she has a separate four-bedroom apartment. I mean, she clings to him like a limpet, because she's nothing without her royal status. And I think she plays on him for not being perhaps the best of husbands, and it's a bit of a guilt trip. I mean, also, she's about the only person who defends him to this day. And of course, for years, he loyally stood by her when she went through all her own scandals. Remember the News of the World sting when she was caught selling access to Andrew for £500,000. But, you know, they have been keen to be co-parents and co-grandparents, but they've had their own love lives, both of them, which I chart in the book. And I know that the Queen and Prince Philip were concerned about them sticking together. I mean, they actually forced the divorce. They were just too embarrassed by the sort of things that Sarah was getting up to. And they felt their son couldn't move on while she was sort of camping in the spare room. So I'm not sure they are the happiest divorced couple in the world, and certainly not after the book's revelations. They play this game. And of course, every time they say that we're going to get back together, their poll ratings go up. It's part of a cynical exercise of PR manipulation. But, you know, the marriage actually only lasted 6 years before they separated. So they've not spent a great deal of time together. I mean, she travels a lot. I mean, he clearly, when they were married, was away at sea. In fact, for the first large part of their marriage until he was in his about 40. So this is just one of the myths that they peddle. But this is what I've been trying to address in all my books, the curation of the historical record by the royal family and others, and the censoring of our history. We're not getting a true picture. It's all been covered up. And because we live in such a deferential society, and because they have such powers of patronage, it's very difficult to shift the dial on this.
Yeah, indeed. As far as he's concerned, we all know he was known in the olden days as Randy Andy, but he does come across, forgive me, to me, as a very slimy individual. I mean, I was reading that at dinner parties, he reads out lots of rude jokes and asks the women if they're wearing underwear, and seeing a sports masseuse, he insisted on being naked. I mean, this all links in with the Jeffrey Epstein saga, doesn't it?
Yes, I mean, he's a very vulgar person with a very sort of basic sense of humour about farts and, as you say, very sort of, well, discourteous and disrespectful to women. I think, like Epstein, I think he has this constant need for sexual gratification. And I think it can be traced back to actually something which should make him sympathetic. I write in the book about how I think he was abused as a child. He was taken off to a brothel at the age of 11. And he had a lot of very early sexual experiences. And this is confirmed actually from several sources, apart from a member of staff that I talked to. And so that perhaps presents things in a slightly different light in his behavior. But yeah, no, he's a bully, he seeks to humiliate people and uses his power knowing that they can't fight back. You know, this was something that was an accident waiting to happen, people say. I mean, it's just amazed that the stories haven't emerged sooner. People were very happy to tell me these stories. I mean, this is the reason I got 300 people talking to me, is because people felt that he'd been protected and this story should come out and he should can no longer hide behind his royal privilege. You know, if we think about it, here is a senior royal who is lining his own pocket on the back of his public role.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And I'm going to come to that very shortly. Do you know who it was that abused him, who took him to this brothel?
No, it was supposedly the father of a friend of his.
Ah, okay, okay. You mentioned the word humiliate, something else I read that an example of humiliation. There was a Royal Society event and he unzipped a woman broadcaster's evening dress without any warning. And because of who he is, she felt she couldn't do anything. Well, that's assault. Sounds like assault to me.
Yes, Tanya Breyer. Yes, it's one of those zips that sort of goes right down to the base of the spine. Yeah, it's about sort of, it's a power game. But I mean, you know, there was a story of him at a dinner where he thinks it's very funny to remove someone's place setting and they come back from going to the lavatory and find that there's no seat there. Or a young girl of 14 camping at Balmoral where he takes the fly sheet off the tent and throws it into the river and thinks that's funny that they've got to sleep in a tent where if it rains, they're going to be sodden. You know, time and time again, it's about abusing his position of power, knowing that no one will be able to do anything about it.
Were people not scared to talk to you, Andrew? Were they quite open and honest with you?
Well, 300 talked to me, but 2,700 either didn't talk to me, told me to get lost, ignored me, etc. And I got some pretty rude comments back. So no, of course, it's still pretty good for a royal book, but you know, people are scared. A staff signed NDAs. The Foreign Office told people not to talk to me. The York family itself, having been given the opportunity of collaborating with me or cooperating to allow you know, their friends to talk to me and shape the narrative, decided not to do so and told their friends not to talk to me. I actually had one interview interrupted halfway through with someone saying, I can't talk to you. So, I mean, they didn't play this very well. I'm, you know, I think a pretty fair and balanced and serious biographer, and this would have been their opportunity to present perhaps a slightly more balanced picture. I mean, I've tried as hard as I can to put their good points, but particularly with Andrew, it's pretty difficult.
I was going to say, it's few and far between. Not easy, is it?
He's his own worst enemy. I mean, it's almost as if he needs to sort of self-sabotage the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, I remember there's a famous episode some of your older readers may remember in 1982 when he's sent off on his first of his sort of trips. You know, he's seen as this good-looking young man. He'll be an adornment to the monarchy. And he goes and he takes a paint gun and turns it on the journalists who are covering the story, covering their clothes and paint and their equipment. And the Queen actually forces him to pay compensation. But, you know, time and time again, it's almost he's on self-destruct button.
Yeah. I was reading as well. It seems like he's above the law. He used to smash through the gates of Windsor when the censors wouldn't work, which, of course, the taxpayer pays for. And complaints were actually made to the Queen about him speeding because he once injured a policeman.
Exactly. He gets policemen to take his points and things like that. He gets his policeman to go and pick up his golf balls when he's hit them down the fairway. You know, he just, they're all little people. He's such a narcissist that he can only think of himself. And I mean, as you remember, I mean, there are lots of stories about how appallingly he treats the staff there, summoning maids up from four floors below to open curtains, and just being, you know, aggressive to quite senior members of the household because they haven't addressed the Queen Mother properly and things like that. He's a man who really has so little sense of identity that he has to rely on his royal status to give him any sort of image.
Very sad. Is he like the black sheep? Well, he obviously is the black sheep of the family, but is he unlike the, you know, his siblings, because they don't appear to come across like that?
No, absolutely. He's very, very different. And that's, I think, a point I would stress and all the people I talk to stress. I mean, they are considerate and thoughtful and treat the staff, for example, like they're members of the family. So he is very different. Dicky Arbuthnot, who was a press secretary of the Queen, described him as the runt of the litter. And of course, there have been lots of rumours, you know, whether he is actually is Philip's son or not. So who knows? It's not something I go into in the book, but it is hard to explain why he is so different.
Mm-hmm. And on to Sarah then. Is she just as bad?
Yes, I think she is. I mean, what we forget is that there were 18 numbers for Sarah in Epstein's Little Black Book, only 16 for Andrew. You know, the whole focus is on Andrew and Epstein, but she was staying in the properties. She was flying on the Lolita Express. And of course, you know, Epstein was paying some very substantial sums of money to cover her debts. But she's never really been put in the frame, or indeed has offered to talk to the FBI as a material witness. So, you know, I think there are a lot of unanswered questions there. But, you know, I mentioned the sting operation by News of the World, but there are court cases I mentioned where she was taking monies which she wasn't able to explain. I mean, large sums, £250,000. There is, I mean, just the way that she's devalued the monarchy by sort of, you know, promoting everything from cranberry juice to Wedgwood China and Weight Watchers. You know, she's sort of, Paul Burrell said, she's gotten to the sweetie shop and gone wild. But, you know, all it does is undermine the authority and of the royal family and the respect that we have for the monarchy.
Yeah, it's a real shame. And do you think she's addicted to spending? I read that she once spent £25,000 in 1 hour in Bloomingdale's.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and you know, if she can't decide which colour of jersey to buy, she'll buy eight. she's a people pleaser, as she says. You know, she has a very low sense of self-esteem. She felt abandoned by her mother, who went off with an Argentinian polo player when she was 13. It led to her overeating, becoming, as she's been described, the Duchess of Pork. And she's, you know, wrestled with her weight all her life, you know, and sometimes you've got to admire her in the way that she's managed to slim down. But she's very generous, and she wants to live really beyond her means with folie de grandeur, you know, very extensive staffs. She can't decide, you know, she'll have three meals prepared. She'll open bottles of expensive wine and not drink them. She just has no sense of what the limits are, really, and how to behave.
And how does she treat the royal staff? Is she respectful, or is she pretty much like Andrew?
Well, I think when she first got married, they liked her. She was a breath of fresh air. She was very natural. They could see that she was slightly sort of overwhelmed by it, and in a rather sort of modest way. But she quite quickly became pretty imperious, asked people to call her mom, insisted, for example, on meals being cooked for her, and then deciding at the last minute to go out, would come back late at night from partying and want meals rustled up for her. There's a story, Wendy Berry, who was the housekeeper at Highgrove, tells of her coming and just bringing her laundry for Wendy's staff to do, you know, not even the stuff that she'd been wearing when she was staying. So, yeah, I'm afraid she changed. She got used to the good life, and she wanted to keep it.
Yeah. What's the future looking like? I mean, they've gone very quiet. I know that he's not really in royal circles sort of officially very much, but what's happening with them both at the moment?
Well, I mean, he is. We see these odd sightings of him going riding and going out in the car for a walk. I mean, the line is that he's under sort of house arrest at Royal Lodge, watching TV and videos, reading books, playing a bit of golf. But, you know, I know that he's going off, for example, for shooting weekends with friends. He entertains people at Sandringham. I've heard that he has gone playing golf in Portugal, with where his daughter, one of his daughters, lives. I'm sure he's carrying on all his various business activities now under the radar. So I'm not sure it's a bad life for a man of 65. He's got, I think, plenty of money. I mean, he hasn't got his reputation left, but he has, you know, he has a few friends, and I think he has, you know, a pretty good life. 100-acre house with a peppercorn rent, only made available to him from the Crown Estate. It's not too bad.
I don't know if you can answer this, Andrew, but do you know whether he's nervous, whether Ghislaine Maxwell's going to ever speak? I know there was some news in America about her having meetings with Donald Trump's people.
I don't think Ghislaine Maxwell will spill the beans on him. I mean, they've been friends since the 1980s. She will deliver up some low-level people that will, they hope, will keep her MAGA faithful happy. But the big boys will be fine. We all know that the Trump material has been weeded out of the files. She just needs to give a couple of low-hanging fruit, and she's off.
Interesting stuff. Well, I really hope that the result of your book is that maybe they will be held accountable. Who knows? It's out in a couple of days, I believe.
It's out on Thursday. So, yes, very exciting.
Congratulations. Well, for our readers, you can pre-order it now from our website, tre.radio. Simply click on the virtual bookshop banner and you'll get through there. It's called Entitled, The New Revealing Biography of Prince Andrew and Sarah Ferguson, and it's from Sunday Times best-selling author Andrew Lowney. Andrew, I know you've written many books and you are a very successful literary agent. Do you have any sort of website we can go to if people want to find out more?
Yes, absolutely. If they just Google my name, they'll get all sorts of websites. The one that they, in fact, I've just set up a new website. The reference is andrewlowney/about. About will probably give it to you. Andrewlowney.me. And then that will tell you about me and the books and some of the publicity, etc.
Fantastic. I apologise. I've been calling you Lowney all the way through this interview.
That's okay.
And it's
Don't
Lowney.
Worry.
Sorry.
Don't worry. I've been called worse things than Looney.
Well, let's not leave it another 10 years till we chat again.
No, that would be nice. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Andrew. Bye.
Bye.